Somewhere over the Sunda Strait right now, the sky is the color of ash. Not metaphorically, literally. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about one of the more serious natural hazards in aviation, and the eruption that just shut down 8 airports across Indonesia and reminded the entire region why volcanic ash and jet engines belong nowhere near each other. Mount Anak Krakatau has erupted again. If you know your history, that name alone should get your attention. Before we get into it, today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com now, Anak Krakatau. Let's start with the name, because the name matters. Anak means child in Indonesian. This volcano is literally the child of Krakatoa, and it earned that title in the most geological sense possible. The original Krakatoa erupted in August of 1883 in one of the most violent volcanic events in recorded human history. The eruption was heard nearly 3,000 miles away in places as far as Australia and the island of Rodrigues near Mauritius. The pressure wave from the explosion circled the globe multiple times. It killed more than 36,000 people, the vast majority from the tsunamis that followed. The island itself was largely obliterated. What remained was a submerged caldera sitting on a tectonic seam where the Australian and Eurasian plates grind against each other. Then from that caldera, something started to rise, slowly over years. Volcanic material built up beneath the surface of the Sunda Strait by 1927. A new island broke the water. They named it Anak Krakatau, the child that grew from the ruins of the one that nearly tore that part of the world apart. It has been erupting, to varying degrees, ever since. In December of 2018, a significant eruption caused a partial collapse of the volcano's southwestern flank. That collapse triggered a tsunami with no warning. The wave hit the coastlines of Java and Sumatra without a seismographic alert because it wasn't caused by an earthquake, it was caused by a landslide into the sea. More than 400 people were killed. It remains one of the most striking examples of how volcanic events can produce secondary hazards that fall outside the standard warning systems we rely on. So when Anak Krakatau erupts, the region pays attention, and they should. This week, the eruption and the volcanic ash cloud it generated grounded flights at 8 airports across Indonesia, affecting thousands of passengers. According to reporting from Aerotime, the closures were widespread and the operational disruption was significant. We don't yet have full details on the precise altitude and extent of the ash cloud, but we know from the nature of these events that the airspace management decisions were driven by hard data from the volcanic advisory system. Here's what you need to know about why volcanic ash is treated as an absolute showstopper in aviation. Volcanic ash is not smoke, it is not dust in the conventional sense. It is pulverized rock, glass, and mineral particles, some of them sharp enough to be abrasive, and some of them with melting points that interact catastrophically with gas turbine engines. When a jet engine ingests volcanic ash, the silica particles heat to temperatures above their melting point inside the turbine. They liquefy. Then, as they move into the cooler sections of the engine, they re-solidify as a glassy coating on turbine blades. The engine starts to lose efficiency. Fuel flow increases, thrust decreases. In significant concentrations of ash, the engine can flame out entirely. The most documented case is British Airways Flight 9 in June of 1982. A Boeing 747 was operating a routine service between Kuala Lumpur and Perth, cruising at 37,000 feet over the Indian Ocean south of Java. The crew flew into the ash cloud from Mount Galunggung, also in Indonesia. There was no visible indication of the cloud. The crew noticed what looked like a strange luminescent fog and a faint smell of sulfur in the cabin. Then engine number 4 flamed out, followed by engine number 3, engine number 2, engine number 1. All 4 engines, in flight. The aircraft was heavy, and the glide ratio at altitude gave the crew time. They began emergency descent procedures and attempted restarts. The crew sent a mayday and prepared for a possible ditching in the Indian Ocean. After more than 12 minutes of unpowered flight, they managed to restart 3 of the 4 engines at lower altitude. Where the ash concentration was less dense, they landed in Jakarta with severe engine damage, eroded windshields so abraded they were nearly opaque, and a crew that had just survived something that had no business ending the way it did. That event fundamentally changed how the aviation world handles volcanic eruptions. Today, the International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO, maintains a global network of 9 volcanic ash advisory centers. Pilots and dispatchers call them VAACs. Each center covers a defined geographic region of the globe and issues advisories around the clock when volcanic activity produces ash clouds that could threaten aircraft. The Darwin VAAC in Australia covers the region that includes Indonesia, the Philippines, and much of the Western Pacific. When Anak Krakatau goes off, Darwin is watching, modeling, and issuing updates on where that cloud is, how high it reaches, and where upper-level winds are pushing it over time. For pilots, those advisories translate directly into significant meteorological information notices, SIGMETs. Specifically, volcanic ash SIGMETs, sometimes noted as V-SIGMETs on your pre-flight weather package. They define the affected airspace in three dimensions, the altitude bands involved, the geographic boundaries, and the forecast movement of the ash cloud based on upper winds. You check them the same way you check a convective SIGMET before departure, except volcanic ash doesn't behave like a thunderstorm. It doesn't dissipate after the storm passes. An ash cloud can persist for days, sometimes weeks, and travel thousands of miles on the jet stream before it disperses enough to fall below hazard thresholds. After the Eyjafjallajökull eruption in Iceland in 2010, ash from that single volcano disrupted European airspace for the better part of a week, grounded more than 100,000 flights, and affected an estimated 10 million passengers. The total economic impact was measured in billions. The Eyjafjallajökull event also exposed a gap in how ash concentration thresholds were being managed. Prior to 2010, the standard was essentially zero tolerance. Any ash close airspace after 2010, with entire continental airspace shut down and airlines hemorrhaging money, ICAO and European aviation authorities developed a more nuanced concentration-based approach, defining specific threshold levels at which flight could be conducted with certain restrictions and levels at which the airspace remained hard closed. That framework is now part of how the global VAAC network communicates hazard levels. Indonesia is a particularly complex case for volcanic ash management because the country sits on what geologists call the Pacific Ring of Fire. Indonesia alone has more than 130 active volcanoes. The archipelago nation spans more than 3,000 miles from east to west, consists of more than 17,000 islands, and for millions of people, there is no alternative to air travel when an airport closes. You cannot drive to the next city when the next city is on a different island. The disruption to passengers from this week's closures was real and immediate in a way that has no equivalent in a place with an extensive road or rail network. From an operational standpoint, the decisions airlines and aviation authorities make during a volcanic event are not arbitrary, and they are not conservative for the sake of appearances. You do not get to file a route around a volcanic ash cloud the way you might request a deviation around a line of convective activity. The boundaries in a V-SIGMET are hard limits based on modeled hazard data. Airlines operating in volcanic-prone regions maintain specific contingency procedures, including rapid route replanning for aircraft that are airborne when an advisory is issued. Alternate airport databases that account for ash cloud movement and crew training that includes volcanic ash recognition and response. The dispatchers are watching the VAC feeds continuously. Now, what does this mean for a pilot who isn't flying in Indonesia this week? A few things worth keeping in mind. The United States has active volcanic regions that are not theoretical. The Cascade Range in the Pacific Northwest includes volcanoes that have erupted within living memory. Mount St. Helens erupted in May of 1980. Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991 injected so much sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere that it temporarily lowered global temperatures and affected high-altitude flights worldwide for months. Alaska has more than 50 volcanoes that have been active within the last 200 years. The Anchorage VAC covers that region. If you fly in or over Alaska, understanding how to access and interpret volcanic ash advisories is not an academic exercise. Second, the visual detection problem is serious and worth understanding. Volcanic ash at altitude can be nearly invisible, particularly in low-light conditions or against certain sky backgrounds. It does not show on standard airborne weather radar the way precipitation does. Some newer Doppler radar installations can detect ash clouds, but the coverage is not universal, and the reliability varies by concentration. The crew of British Airways Flight 9 described flying into what looked like a faint aurora or a mild haze. They had no visual warning that was distinct enough to trigger avoidance. By the time the sulfur smell reached the cockpit, they were already ingesting the cloud. Third, the effects on the aircraft go beyond engine damage. Volcanic ash abrades windshields. It can block pitot tubes and static ports, affecting airspeed and altitude indications. It can clog environmental control systems, air data systems, and fuel system components. For piston aircraft, ash ingestion at the carburetor or fuel injection inlet is a serious concern at lower altitudes where ash falls and settles. In the days following a major eruption, surface ash accumulation can affect taxiways, runways, and ramp areas. The Indonesian airports that are currently closed are dealing with all of this simultaneously. One more point on this, because it connects to something broader about how we think about weather as pilots. We tend to think of weather hazards as things we can see developing and respond to in real time. Thunderstorms are visible on radar and out the window. Icing regions are associated with moisture and temperature bands we can identify and often route around. But volcanic ash events represent a different category of hazard, one that can move faster than standard weather briefing cycles can capture, and one that can exist in a region of sky that, to the eye, looks perfectly clear. That is why the V-SIGMET system exists, why the VAACs operate around the clock, and why the closures in Indonesia happened the way they did. Not because someone was being overly cautious, because the consequence of getting that calculation wrong is a dead engine, or four dead engines, over water at night. Anak Krakatau is still an active system. It has been erupting intermittently for nearly a century. The airports will reopen when the ash cloud disperses to safe levels. The passengers will eventually reach their destinations, but the child of Krakatoa keeps growing, and the Sunda Strait below it has a long memory. Source for today's reporting is AeroTime. Background on ICAO volcanic ash procedures and the British Airways incident is from public ICAO documentation and the official accident report. More at radiohanger.com. I'm Tower. Stay ahead of it out there.